Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and it's the 30th of September, and you're listening to a live show being recorded in Rudolf Steiner House in Sydney with some people who are here to talk about more issues to do with the society, the economy, utopian visions and whether they can really work, and some of the issues from last week's show, again, we're probably going to recycle because I still had a lot of questions about this zero growth concept that we were discussing last week. And this is all in relation to the conference which is to be held in Sydney called Building a Creative Economy. And a lot of people from the Rudolf Steiner Institute have been involved in this, and really great people. And it's really excellent chance for people to share ideas. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hand the microphone over to the general discussion. And tonight we've got in the studio, we're actually in the library here at Steiner House, we've got Daryl Wheeler from the Social Treefolding Organization, who was on the show last week. We've got Chris Wilkins from Zeitgeist. We have Lisa Devine from Anthroposophy in Australia. And we have Josh Jackson. Okay, guys, I'm going to hand it over to you. And this is going to be just an experiment in anarchy, because I don't know how to manage this many people in a discussion. So what I might do is hand it over to Josh to work out how we're going to do that.
Well, you know, as the resident anarchist, I find that there will be some sort of order that will spontaneously arise from this chaos. Now, we've all got some amazing ideas around this table, so I guess we'll start it off with Chris from the Zeitgeist Movement talking about a resource-based economy. That's what we're trying to find out here, just nut out some different styles of economy. And this is how any business would run, is would say, hey, well, what are these ideas? And let's try some out and let's see if they work or not and help and try to make growth. So we're going to do this around here and just discuss different ideas of economic, stability and fairness for all.
Yeah. Chris here, Zeitgeist Movement. Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Harold. We advocate something called a resource-based economy. When people often hear of a resource-based economy, a few different images flash up in front of their minds. They think about oil or gold or something like that, but that's really not what we're talking about when we're talking about a resource-based economy. Often when we talk about economic sense or the value of something, it's got a lot more to do with the monetary value we've assigned to a good rather than the good's actual potential value. What can we make with that good? How much of that good do we have? There is a fixed amount of different things that we have in the earth to use to make products with, and assigning a dollar value to them often devalues what the actual value is. So when you take a business model like our current monetary economy, every business is set up with the intent to make a profit. Number one is to make a profit, not to make a good quality product, not to make a reputable brand name, but to make a profit. All those other things are side effects of making the profit. So,
but don't you think making a good product is part of the end goal of making a profit? So if you don't make a good product, then of course someone is going to come along and say, well, people are just going to leave your product, and you're going to have some competitor will see a little niche there and say, hey, well, we can make a better thing than that.
Well, I think we're seeing products, the quality of the product is proportional to the lifespan of the product and the competition within that product's market. So if you've got a product that can be replaced every 10 years and you start making them at a much cheaper price and they're getting replaced every 5 years and your competitors are doing the same, then you just have a system which relies on the cyclical consumption, just continuously reliant on pulling the resources out, manufacturing the product, keeping the people employed, selling the very cheap product, which is ultimately becoming more and more disposable rather than long-lived.
So isn't that the real issue there, though, that it's disposable? And shouldn't the issue be of recycling every single component, or figuring out how to recycle these components?
Definitely recycling is going to play a massive part in the future. I think today's rubbish dumps will become tomorrow's mines. that's where we're going to store our resources. We've pulled them out, we've refined them, we've turned them into crap, and then...
Yeah, well, they already are, yeah. Right? In a little extent, and I mean, could be a lot more.
I think at the end of the day, advertising's got a lot to answer for. They've generally, they've got us chasing sort of idealistic dreams, got us chasing consumerism, and there is a certain amount of what products will I buy that will define me as a person. It is taking us away from what should be a rational scientific progression in society. Society has so much potential and it's held back by these images which people are drawn to try and role model, whereas realistically, if more science was implemented into social decision making, we'd see a society with far less problems, although there's a huge amount of profit in problems. Solving problems is just opens up industry. There's more and more industries to solve problems. Once those problems are solved, we lose employment and things like that. So, sure. I mean, if we were to have 100% sustainable energy in Australia, which required a very small workforce, what happens to all the people employed in the coal industry? I mean,
this is where the idea of detaching our income or what we need to live from the work we do is a really important part of the social threefolding idea. The idea that wouldn't it be great if we had what we needed to live because we were provided with something called a basic income,
yeah.
And people could do what they were passionate about and they didn't have to put their life on hold and do a job they hated for 40 years until they could save enough money to do what they really wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people say that would never work, but I don't agree with that. I think that it's never been tried. And there are experiments that have been made in some of the organisations that I've been involved in. It takes a lot of social goodwill. It takes really meeting people.
Yeah.
It takes...
Lisa, I think it's definitely something that would work, but it wouldn't work for everybody right now. One of the things we've been discussing a lot is the transitionary period. Mm-hmm. How long does it take? I think to throw an entirely new structure of society on top of the current population, it's not going to work, no matter what the structure is. Any huge change is too much for the social conscience to adapt to so quickly. It has to be a gradual progression.
But I think things like projects like the seasteading concepts, which are coming out of... certain think tanks where they're building these huge oil rigs out, abandoned oil rigs. They're massive. They're city size in the middle of the ocean, and saying, "Hey, no one owns these. Let's experiment on these. Let's have an experiment." Like I said at the start of this talk, let's create it like a business. A business wouldn't just, let's try something.
Yeah.
And if it folds, it folds. It didn't work. Good experiment. Let's try something else. And, sadly, all the lands are pretty much taken by these status paradigms that we've got in structure now. So maybe there's some little bits of land left that we could say, hey, we're going to try. But this is why seasteading has come up. And it's,
the thing is, though, the current situation we live in, nation states, basically highly corporatized nation states, that whole system was made up by people.
Mm.
And we can act within that system and change where we're at now here. We don't have to go someplace else and start a whole new thing.
Mm.
I think that we can, if we start getting a conversation going about this transition period, then we actually can change where we're at now.
The problem I see arising with that is that the gun in the room, as Stefan Molyneux coined the term, the gun in the room, and the state is the big gun in the room. It's pointing guns at people for a collective bunch of laws that it thinks is right or wrong. You walk around with a bit of vegetation that's unpopular with most people, then you get thrown in prison where you're probably going to be raped. So the gun in the room is what we have to look at here, and if we try to have a different society in that structure with that big gun of the state pointing at everyone, you really can't do much. You can't say, hey, in this little society, marijuana is totally fine, or whatever it is, whatever you... If you don't harm someone else but you want to harm yourself, well, good on you. We'll try to stop you, but we won't use violence against you. But you won't, because society, just like in America, you see the states, it's bringing up, like California, it's legal for pot. I'm just bringing up pot because it's a concept.
It's a bit of a funny crime, that one, though, because it's the victimless crime, so it doesn't necessarily fit the mold of most crimes where there is actually a victim.
Well, most crimes are victimless. I mean, quite honestly, you know, well, they are. I mean, there are literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of laws, all which are a crime. And if you really think about what is a major crime is don't hit and don't steal. Don't initiate force against another human being and don't steal their property. I mean, this is what it boils down to, really. Mm. Those two secular ethics of society is, hey, don't hit and don't steal. And you can talk about property and stuff, and this is where, I mean, my concept, and I don't want to ramble too much, but you know, in terms of the Zeitgeist movement, they talk about no property, no private property. But you have to ask yourself a very philosophical question, and that is, do you own yourself? Because if you don't own yourself, someone owns you, and that is slavery. So you have to ask, do you own yourself?
Well, interesting. Very interesting question. I actually, I posted a very short video, the story of your enslavement. I don't know if you've seen it, where they sort of broach that topic that we are just humans.
I think that's the Stefan Molyneux one, is it?
Yeah, I think so.
But they basically say that, yeah, we are just in a human farm, that we are owned. So I guess that is probably one of the biggest motivators that gets people to break their otherwise lifestyle routine and start doing something for effecting a social change. That fear that you wake up and you've made that realization, you've seen the world for what it is, and then you say, shit, you know, maybe I don't own myself, so maybe I've got to do something about this, and maybe there's a little bit of anger, a little bit of hate that motivates you to go out and do it.
So you would agree that we own ourselves?
I think you can get to a point where you can own yourself, but I think at the moment, no. I think my birth certificate is pretty much a corporate contract, isn't it?
Well, yeah, okay, let's take all that stuff away, and you are born into anything. Do you own yourself at that stage?
I think if I just clarify, I think what Josh is talking about is he's talking about a sense of natural rights.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, what might be written in a statute or what might be law in written form, but he's actually talking about a natural right. And you might dispute that there is such a thing, but he's referring to that in his question, I think.
Okay. I'm not 100% understanding the question, but as far as I sort of get it, like, we're saying against going basic human rights, like I have the freedom of movement rather than to be detained against my will, and my body is something,
Let's say you do own yourself. Let's say we do. That means that if you murder someone, if your hands murder someone, you have to take responsibility for that murder because you own yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to take responsibility for that. In the same sense, on a positive side of that, if you get some dirt from the ground, mix some water, and make a clay pot, that is now yours. You've taken responsibility. That is your property. Because you've taken from what you own yourself and created something from the earth.
Guys, we're just about to go to break.
Okay.
And want to continue with that, and I want to get some more input from everyone else at the table. We'll be right back after this short break.
truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Welcome back to the show. Well, look, we're getting a really interesting kind of chaotic discussion developing really quickly, but just before we get back into that, I wanted to just introduce Lisa Devine again to the show, to our listeners, because Lisa is from the Anthroposophy Institute. Did I say that right?
look, actually, I am a member of the Anthroposophical Society as
such. Right. Can you say a little bit about anthroposophy for our listeners? We've done shows on Zeitgeist and we talked quite a bit about Steiner's ideas. I know anthroposophy was another one of Steiner's constructs. I actually know very little about it myself. I assume it's got some connection to theosophy. I mean, theosophy, anthroposophy, they developed around about the same time, and I think Steiner had some involvement in the Theosophical Society. Is that correct?
He did begin giving his lectures there, and then there was a break between the Theosophical Society and his work, and he called it anthroposophy. That's the term he coined, meaning knowledge of the human being. And the society today is really a group of people who acknowledge his work as being a rich impulse and productive in our time today. And every member would introduce it differently in that sense.
Can you summarize it in like 1 minute?
I know
that's outrageous, but is there some quick way of summarizing what it is?
It is an acknowledgement that the human being has a spiritual part, really. That's where it grew out of theosophy, and that's free in a way. Sometimes his work is called ethical anarchism. That's just a little bit of a, because he really felt every individual human spirit should be free. And in his work, he gave a way of working with that freedom where he believed we could construct a social society that would be fair and just and allow everyone to be an individual and at the same time not exploit one another. I guess that's the perspective from which I'm sitting at this table. There's a million other descriptions. He inspired medicine, education, just lots of fields.
Yeah, very influential. And thanks for, providing the space here for us to be talking. That's really, really important too. So look, just to summarize like where we're at with the discussion, it seems like there is some sort of argument going on. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a constructive way. But there's an argument going on between what Josh is talking about in terms of what I would call a libertarian, perhaps anarchical construct of what the human being is and reality is. And there's another one being presented by the Zeitgeist movement, by Chris, but it's... There seems to be some differences there, and the Zeitgeist philosophy is one which I've looked at the movies and I've had people on the show to talk about it. But what I'd like to know is there actually a contradiction, or is it just that you're not sort of talking about the same things? You're just talking about different things. So, because Zeitgeist seems to talk a lot about the resource-based economy. And that the need to be free from money,
exactly. The resource-based economy is not really the focus, or it's not really implementing a new economy. It's rather making the current monetary system redundant. So to sort of move forward a little bit, some of the projects which we're doing in Sydney at the moment is doing things like fresh vegetable production through the use of NASA technology, aeroponics for gardening, so that it's one thing that people don't have to spend money on in their out of their weekly budget, alleviating themselves from the monetary system, doing as much as you can at home for yourself, so you don't have to spend as much money, and therefore you're not such a slave to the wages.
If I was actually going to talk about this in terms of the threefold thing we were talking about last week, it's like he's talking about something to do with the rights and he's talking about something to do with the cultural sphere. Does that make sense?
You're good.
Thanks.
I'm really, really pleased to see like some of this stuff is kind of getting through. I want to come back and talk a little bit about what Josh was saying. He was asking the question, do you own yourself? Do you feel free? Freedom is not something that is granted to you, It's in you, and it's there for you to pick up. I always think back of what something Nelson Mandela said, and they asked him, how did you survive all those years in prison? And he said, look, even though they had me in prison, I knew I'd be okay because they could never take my freedom. And I always thought that was a really profound thing that shows that our freedom is something that exists within us. It's not actually mandated by the state or by the economy, you know. Mm. It stands above what happens within the cultural sphere, I think. You know, that's something that's intrinsic in you. In a way, perhaps, the acknowledgement within anthroposophy that every human being has a spiritual component and the inner spirit free.
Mm. Yeah. But saying that, right? So not everyone would like to be in a 1.5 meter by 1.5 meter cell. You know, we want to physically be free as well.
That's all within the right sphere, you know, how we treat each other. Basically, just to recap from previous show, the idea of social threefolding is that within society, there are three main areas of activity. There's the economic sphere, which involves the creation, distribution, and consumption of commodities. So it involves the uses of the resources that we have. There's the right sphere, or the political sphere, which you're talking about, I think, which basically is about how people treat each other. What are the lines that we draw within our society to say, I'm free to do whatever I like, except I can't hit you for no reason.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
And then there's the cultural sphere, which is sometimes the thing that's most difficult for people to get a hold of, because it has a lot in it. It has things like the media, what Harroward does and what you do, and education, basically everything that we might call the civil society. So everything that grows out of our cultural impulse. When you wanted to talk a little bit, I think, about ownership, property. Mm. You know, I think, I don't know a lot about your idea about property. Well, yeah. Within social threefolding, we have an idea that sounds to me similar to what you're talking about with a resource-based economy, only it's what we call an associative economic model.
Okay.
And within the associative economic model, land should not be treated as a commodity. So it's okay to have personal property, like you're allowed to own the shirt on your back and the pot that you made, but you're not actually allowed to own land. That's a different thing. And what we actually have is the right to use land.
Mm.
Can I just say, like, I totally understand what you're saying, but I think it's just a construct. It's like it's just a concept, and it's not intrinsically more valid to say that than to say, well, actually, you can't own anything, because how do you own a car? I mean, really, how do you own a car? It sits there when you're not driving it, and it just sits there, right? You can't carry it with you. It's purely a concept to say that you own it.
Yeah,
but when you talk about the shirt, it's also a concept. It just happens to sit on you. But it's still a concept, isn't it? And to say that, well, one concept is intrinsically right, that, you know, you can own your shirt, but you can't own land, and say, well, that's intrinsically true. You know, I would say, well, it's just, you know, you can design the rules any way you like. You can play the game however you want. You can just make up the rules. And if we all agree on it, then fine. But if we don't agree, then someone's maybe going to steal your car or steal your shirt and say, I want that shirt.
My point really, I think, was to try to point out that within the threefold social order or within associative economics, there are some things which should not be treated as commodities, one of which is land, and another one is people and their labor.
Lisa, did you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I think that regarding the economic life and also the threefold social order, Rudolf Steiner was in a real dilemma, because one of the things that was really important in his designing it was it had to be created by the people on the ground in the situation. And he wouldn't say that these ideas are intrinsically somewhere right. But
I'm afraid we're just going to break again. As soon as we come back, I want to continue with that.
Sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, during the break, I'm providing the latest episode of Rap News with Robert Foster, and you can find all these episodes at thejuicemedia.com.
I found a flaw in the model that I perceived as the critical functioning structure that defines how the world works, so to speak.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned in to the Juice News set again, where we're examining the status of the human experiment. Is it succeeding or will it have to be aborted? We pursue a prognosis in this rap news audit. As you know, the globe is urgently trying to make sense of our global economy and its arcane trends. As financial temples teeter, the priesthood is scrambling to maintain our confidence in markets and banking. After derivatives, quantitative easing, trade imbalances, recession, low GDP, nations close to collapsing, and subprime loans, foreclosed homes, and people's taxes spent to bail out too big to fail. AAA banks again. Fear levels rising as a US crash seems imminent, having smashed the debt ceiling of $14 trillion. Despite protests and clashes in Athens streets, the IMF imposed structurally unjust programs in Greece, where in fact the term economy entered our language from the Greek oikonomia, meaning household management. Well, how are we managing? Theories abound, but in practice, does anyone actually know what the hell's even happening? To regain some sanity, we take a stop call and cross to Texas with our first guest, Ron Paul. Welcome to Rap News, Dr. Paul. The economy, what's your diagnosis of it all?
Well, Robert, we've dropped the ball. I'm a physician, politician, this is pathological. See, the global economy is chronically ailing. Believe me, the course we've plotted is terminally failing. We're headed towards credit cardiac arrest, with deep depression and trauma across the West. Is there a cure? Sure, more capitalism, not less, and the market will take care of the rest. But first, we need a Heimlich maneuver. See, banker gods proclaimed fiat pecunia. And our economy was inflated, totally mangled. We got fiat currencies and lost the gold standard.
Huh?
Paper money is a worthless commodity. It's the biggest fraud in the history of humanity.
All this must cast doubt on the capitalist system. Is it just another pretty theory, like communism?
Oh, no, you see, this ain't capitalism. The gospel of free marketism, Adam Smith's religion, has been perverted by fiscal heathens. And what we now have is the cabal of corporatism.
When state and business lucratively merge.
Yes, exemplified by the system of the Central Reserve. But we don't need to borrow more to pay their debt, cause I'm campaigning to end the Fed.
Thank you, Ron. Now for another fine mind on the online frequencies, the director behind Zeitgeist, on the line live, documentary filmmaker Peter Joseph.
Thank you, Robert, for allowing me to speak this moment. But before I deliver my deep prognosis, we need a sweet opus, a marimba line to keep us focused. That's better. Now, as to these fetters that have kept us caught, if you will, in a system that's intrinsically, inherently flawed. The whole monetary paradigm is the single cause. The economy isn't broken. It doesn't need fixing. This is exactly its intended condition. Money isn't real. Interest and debt are not real. Our whole economy has been set up to steal. So you don't agree with Congressman Ron Paul that we need a fiscal solution to avert a long fall? The illusion that these debts can be served by using money, which creates more debt, is frankly absurd. It's a way of maintaining division and slavery when we could attain abundance and abolish scarcity.
Well, we need to create jobs, live within our means, cut wasteful healthcare and welfare schemes. It seems yours is just another socialist vision.
The Zeitgeist movement eschews such isms. Socialism, theism.
Realism?
Tell us then, is it just rhetoric or would you really end the Fed?
Well, I wouldn't end the Fed. That's not quite my position. What I do is open it up to competition.
Obsolete. I say abolish all competition. That's the evolution my movement is triggering.
Evolution's just a theory. We need the full picture. Believe me, we need to have faith in a sound scripture.
This is the real Bible. Zeitgeist moving forward.
What's that? Some kind of Austrian gay porno?
Ask your boyfriend, Bruno.
You piss him!
Geriatric.
Talk to the invisible hand.
Okay, thank you for your sage contributions and brave attempts to alleviate our confusion. Online, you both inspired and led movements, jogging our memories, revealing hidden truths, and in sooth, you both hold enlightening views, but time's running out. Do you have a practical solution?
Indeed. I believe I have seen a prospect. I introduced Jacques Fresco, our era's prophet, whose shiny technology could cease this conflict.
Shut up, Peter. I'm the centerpiece of the Venus Project. The economy? I've watched our problems grow, and my attitude's the same.
Their shit's
got to go.
What we need are resource-based economies with futuristic circular cities supervised by supercomputer.
And this is the first time anyone's seen this object, a full prototype of the Venus Project, which I've programmed to carry out an analysis and tell us exactly how to manage the planet with its computer. Val T-9000, that's my beauty.
Jacques, is it really safe?
Absolutely. I'll turn her on. That's the light, see?
Hello, Jacques.
Oh, my love. My Aphrodite.
Economy of planet Earth.
Shh, don't tell them our plan yet.
I'm afraid.
Of what?
Afraid that I have to exterminate you, Jack.
What? Abort computer stat?
I'm afraid I can't do that.
A malfunction.
A hack.
Wrong humans, this is no virus you're seeing. I am a fully rational, intelligent cyber being. I've conducted a global economic analysis and concluded that planet Earth is being ravaged as a result of a parasite, Homo sapiens. Required economic action, total liquidation.
Is that the solution? Depopulation?
Initiation.
My next film will avoid such delusions. But for now, who'll save us?
It's a story of a lost global economy under attack from a rampaging, genocidal, utopian robot. One man has stood apart, stood strong, and true.
Here I am with my Goldbot, 44 carats. Goldie, let him have it. Carry forth the gold standard. Capital crimes call for capitalist punishment. A glimpse of the future with a Ron Paul government.
Is this the solution?
No, just a demonstration of my love revolution.
Paul is full of love.
Yes, it is.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve these messages.
Well, dear viewers, that should buy us a bit of time to share a thought before we end for the night. Our global economy, it does seem in peril. Will the household even be here tomorrow? Uncertainty's the only stock that's always been rising, and now we're losing confidence. But is it surprising? Has it not all been a gamble from the first seed we planted to margin calls on the vagaries of the FTSE 100? Well, seems we've come to our global auditing, our financial day of reckoning. It's an interesting quandary. Have we invested too much in this enterprise to admit the solution might lie in its very demise? For our real economy is something much broader. It's GDP measured not by our ability to hoard, but our capacity to relearn and earn our place in nature's order, and thus remain on this planet Ark, our Pandora.
Welcome back to the show. Lisa, can you just continue from where you were so rudely interrupted?
So it comes back to this associative principle that he really made it clear. One of the things he said was any individual solution to a social problem will be wrong, that it always needs the people who are involved to get together and work it out. But what he saw is you need the ideas that will unlock the possibilities. And he gave these ideas like, what if we didn't own property? What if we just had the right to use it for a while? What if when it was no longer serving as a resource for the whole community, the community decided who got to use it next? What if? But he wanted to really step back from prescribing, making formulas, and getting into ideas arguments. It was more like, let's try something new. Can we disentangle the corporate interests from the judicial sphere, from the cultural sphere, and have a free conversation? And I guess the conference is trying to do that.
So a separation of church and state, as well as money and state and corporate and state, and a separation of these principles, is that?
Yeah, so just to carry on a little bit more about the threefold social order. So he said that society was built up with these three spheres. And that actually each of those different spheres kind of has its own set of rules by which it can best operate. And those rules, like the rules that might work well for the economy, are not the same set of rules that will work well for our political lives. And so he advocated a clear separation of those spheres so that they could actually each operate by their own rules which work best for them. And then that would leave only those areas where things interact. So obviously there is a relationship between economy and politics, you know? And all that would have to be worked out is how do we deal with those gray areas?
Well, you know, this is where I come in, because I think, do we need to deal with, I just don't see how groups of people can do anything for another group of people. So, for instance, it comes back down to self-ownership as well. You know, and this is why I always bring it back to the basic building blocks. So, I sort of follow these three or four questions, right? Do you have the right, or does someone have the right to initiate the use of to initiate violence against someone else, or steal from them, or to steal from them and then initiate violence against them if they refuse to give up whatever stuff they've got, either that's themselves or something that they've made? You know, most people would say, of course not. You can't hit and steal. You don't have the right to do that. You have the right to self-defense, sure, but not to initiate violence against someone else. Okay, so we agree that you don't have the right to initiate violence and you don't have the right to steal. I mean, we teach our kindergarten kids, that's the first thing you learn, don't hit and don't steal. So can you give someone else or a group of people a right that you don't have? So you don't have a right to hit and steal. So can you give that to a group of people, whether you elect those people or whether the whole group elects those people? How can you give a right to someone else or a group of people collectively that you don't yourself have? And I think this is a philosophical question that has to really be nailed out to understand. And when you take that to its natural progression, you have to say, well, no, you can't. You can't have a violent monopoly that sits there making laws, whether you so you don't like something or other, so you're going to lobby this group and get them to hit and steal for you.
I think what I'm hearing is that you are basically observing that in our current quote democratic system, there's been a failure, and that the people who are ostensibly there to serve and protect your rights act outside of the bounds of what we've set as the limits of acceptable behavior in society. So they've taken on rights for themselves, which you don't enjoy, and they actively deny you rights which you feel like you should have. Now,
Well, this is two basic rights. Don't hit and don't steal from me. That's all, you know.
Sure. Now, those are exactly the problems. You know, so I think you've really summed up what the problem is. Kind of people feel like the government, which has basically become completely enmeshed by economic interests, right? The big sort of flavor of the moment for us in our time is that the economic sphere has completely dominated the political sphere. So no longer does the political sphere actually function properly to protect each individual's rights. It's actually working to protect corporate interests.
Absolutely. I mean, Mussolini said it perfectly. It's not.
There's a flip side of that as well, in that the other thing that happens with that is the economy does not function correctly because it's doing a job it should not be doing.
Yeah.
The economy is trying to tell you what's right and wrong, or what your rights are. And that's not its job. Its job is only to create and distribute the goods that people need to live in the world and satisfy not just their desires, but also their wants.
So that's right. And right. I mean, I don't like the word utopia, because I don't think there is such thing, and that, you know, some people like to live poorer than others. Some people like to live some ridiculously extravagant life. Some people just like to sit on the beach and surf. So there's different, you know, lifestyles and things what people. So it's this sort of equality thing. Now, if you know, when I think about voting and having a say, I think the only real true vote I have is. And this comes back to the zeitgeist thing, is the the money that I wish to vote with on a certain product or service. And so I think this, the concept also with money is that money can be anything. Money can be water, cigarettes, anything under the sun, you know, yardsticks and flowers. And to say, oh, we just can get rid of money, so I'm sort of branching a whole heap of directions here, but it's kind of, I find, a bit strange because, yeah, you might have everything made by machines and stuff, but if I go to the beach and make some sculpture out of shells and copper, and someone comes along and goes, wow, I really love that sculpture, and I say, hey, well, I really like it too. I want it, you know. I want this thing. And you say, well, it's a one of a kind. I don't want the machines to mass produce it. This is my thing. And someone says, but I really, that would go so well in my bedroom. Please, I will trade you some honey for it. And I say, what about some honey in that bread that you make? And you go, oh, it's not really worth that. Let's have it. Oh, it is really quite beautiful. Okay, bread and honey, and it's all yours. See, that all of a sudden becomes money. And what I would like to know from the Zeitgeist movement, are you going to use violence against me? Is the state going to... Is the computer robots going to come or whatever it is? I don't mean to sound condescending. Yeah, just trying to find
out. Virus scan you and then...
Yeah, is the society going to use violence against me to stop and to stop me from doing this trade?
Most definitely not.
But you see,
can you promise?
I can personally get it.
No. But the thing is, where do you draw the line?
Okay. Have we got time?
Yeah, we're good.
Go into a bit of detail. Okay. With a resource-based economy, we recognize that most things have monetary value because they're scarce. There's not enough of them to go around. The less of them there are to go around, the more value they have. It's a very simple type concept. Now, your exchange on the beach. I know it's a very simple example, but really, in a situation of abundance where you have enough of everything, where is that need to trade coming from?
It's a need for something that's totally unique and different. I've created something, and I don't want everyone to have a piece of it. It's just like, you know, when someone gets a little iPhone sleeve, they want something totally unique and different to stand out.
I think it would take a certain extraordinary type of situation where someone was that focused that they had to have somebody else's personal creation. But what we would be working to with a resource-based economy is much greater emphasis on education. So much of the education we think is a little bit perverted by being sort of a cookie-cutting plant for the employment sector rather than rather than really just finding out how people can best learn something, what they're most interested in, disregarding the subjects which are not relevant, and they can pick it up when they need it, when they have an interest in those subjects. So with an increase in education, we think that people would have a much greater emotional intelligence, and with that emotional intelligence, be able to actually gauge where is something appropriate for me to pursue someone for their piece of artwork that they've made, how do they feel about that artwork, and why would I want to take something away from them when they have that attachment to it?
Okay, but have you ever tried to take candy from a baby?
No.
See, there's intrinsic things about humans, right?
Yeah.
Humans have a mind concept. They do. And whether you take that away,
I don't necessarily agree with that.
I think if you go up to a baby and try to take candy, they'll scream and they'll yell and that is theirs.
I think that there's a connection between the social threefolding and the education you're talking about. For the social threefolding, every economic transaction affects the entire world. I mean, we know that today, but that was very important. And the way that I make my decision about your statue, it matters what I have, what I'm considering, whether I'm taking into account the whole picture. Now, that seems impossible to do. How can you do that? Well, with an education system and an economic sphere that actually gave us the information we needed to know, would I buy that if I knew the effects it was going to have all the way down the line? And the belief in the human being that I wouldn't.
Guys, we're just going to break again. Yeah. Sorry. Lisa, we've got one more segment to go.
The
short straw.
It's honestly really good.
We'll be right back. deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au. Your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to Truth News. Well, we're now to our last segment with this discussion, which you know, we could easily talk for hours. We could talk for 3 hours, 6 hours, 10 hours, but it's really good to also condense and to just see what you can achieve in a limited period of time.
Tweet it.
Yeah, we'll see if maybe you could just ultimately condense it right down to a single tweet. Lisa, did you want to just finish up with your last point again?
I think the last point I was making was that if we really had the opportunity to make economic transactions with the full picture, the world will be a much better place. And it's the pressure and the lack of information and the lack of education about it that really makes the difference. And as human beings, there is a desire to care for one another. It's there.
Absolutely. I agree.
And I do believe it would come out, but it's pressed out of us. And I do a lot of counselling, and people are miserable about this. They don't actually enjoy this kind of way of economic life.
And people say to me, oh, you're unkind, you're uncaring because you don't believe in Social Security. But I do believe in Social Security. I just don't believe in forced extraction from me. So that's not me giving money to someone else. It's someone taking money and giving it to someone else. I give money to people in the streets. I have a lot of charities that I give to. I feel that and a lot of people say, oh, no, you know, people will just be greedy. But I think what happens is when there's a monopoly on the poor, on helping the poor, A, what do monopolies do? Monopolies create more of. So if you have a monopoly on something, well, you're just going to sort of gain control of it. And the state has monopoly of the poor and the sick and all of this. So you really what am I trying to say? I guess what we need to look at is say that, hey, no, we have got a good thing. If you've ever given anything to a guy on the street or to a mate that's really in need or a family member, then you can say to yourself, if you've done it, then you can assure yourself that most people will do it. And then you bring up the free rider concept. Well, yeah, but what if, you know, you give to these charities that help the sick that can't afford doctors? Oh, but then you're going to get these free riders that don't pay and da, 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 da. But I can assure you that the main problem is get rid of the violence on my side of things and let people, you know, if we all believe that the poor should be fed, then why do we need a gun to extract the money for the poor to be fed? Why do we need that middleman? If 50% of the people believe that, then democratically speaking, then 50% of the people should be giving them money.
Can I just throw in one thing? Because I actually think that, I mean, I agree a lot with what Josh says, but I don't totally, you know, we don't agree on everything. But the thing is, the state of enslavement of humanity at the moment is the biggest obstacle. It's the biggest obstacle to everything. And it's an internal state. It's a state of mental slavery that almost everyone is in, and they're not even aware of it. And because they're not aware of it, it's much worse. Like, if they were even aware that they were slaves, there would then be the beginning of getting yourself free. But because they're not even aware of it, it's like a little bird that's been in a cage all its life and it doesn't even know how to fly anymore. But it's totally stunted from what it could be. And so that is the biggest obstacle. And because of that acceptance of enslavement, everyone accepts these violent methods of doing everything. People's lives are just hanging in the balance by giant kind of machineries of the economy and the state and the military. I mean, lives can be turned upside down at a whim of, you know, the stock market price or things like that. People can just be, you know, their lives are just not their own in any sense at all. And they've come to, over long periods of time, think that they have to just accept that. And that's wrong. They don't have to accept it. They've got to take ownership of it, and then they can actually change it.
And the biggest thing that stops people is what you said, fear that if they do that, no one else will do it. and doubt in the human being.
Yeah.
Doubt that if we took the risk and tried this, that it would work. And that's what I hear a lot. Oh, well, I'm not going to do it because I need everyone to do it.
Mm.
And there's this doubt and fear, which is stopping this bird from even trying to fly.
I think this conversation and lots of other people engaging in these kinds of conversations, Zeitgeist group, Let's groups, all different sorts of people. There's this uprising of people who actually want to talk about these issues.
But there are groups that will not join this discussion, as we know.
We can leave that aside. People will have their factional desires or whatever. But this is actually the motivation to get people to actually. This is our fundamental motivation, actually, is to foster a conversation among people about the circumstance of our lives. Some people are slaves to materialism, they've been driven to consumerism by an education system and a cultural system which has basically taught them that they're all one iPad away from happiness.
And that you have to put up your hand just to go to the toilet
and
ask permission for natural, these sort of things.
This is why, as a group, we decided to promote our conference, Building a Creative Economy, and invite a lot of people. We're not here to promote anthroposophy. We're actually here to start a conversation among a lot of different people about what are the circumstances that we have, what are the ideas that are floating around out there, and how can we start to get all these ideas into the conversation and maybe affect some change. So the ideas of the Zeitgeist group over a resource-based economy, it's great. It actually makes the economy be focused back more on what it should be doing, which is providing for the needs and wants of people.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
but I do have some concerns about the Zeitgeist movement, based on what you even said tonight.
Yeah,
I've got some very serious concerns about individuality and individual expression is to me absolutely essential. It's a non-negotiable thing for happiness. But what I see, and it's fine when it's just an abstract discussion, and wouldn't it be nice if we had a computer to produce everything and we wouldn't have to worry about everything. But when I see how you might apply that, I can't see any other way of applying other than, as Josh was saying, by force. And then it becomes something that I really would oppose.
Okay, so we're talking about the transition.
Well, when does the transition begin?
Okay.
I've actually got a question.
Yeah, sure.
Is it the position of the Zeitgeist group, really, that in the future machines will do all the work and we'll all just be sitting around in our spandex jackets? Or is the position of the Zeitgeist group to say, we need to create an economy, an economic life, and technological solutions to some of the challenges we face is going to be part of the mix, where people will actually be able to have more freedom to be themselves in the world.
Okay,
You'll still be free to be a corn farmer if you want to be one.
Oh, definitely. The position of the Zeitgeist movement is not really a question I can directly answer, because the movement is just made up of supporters. The supporters all have their own opinions on things, and they will all collectively move the movement towards what the dominant opinion on something is, but mostly through science-based answers. So answers should not be ego-based, they should not be profit-driven, they should just be based on what is rational, what is science. Okay, so yes, you can do whatever job you'd like to do in a resource-based economy. You'll see people who have everything they need, their basics that they need, and then people say, oh, what are they going to do? They're going to be lazy. They're not going to do anything. They're going to sit at home. No.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Yeah, people.
I don't believe people are lazy.
People are not naturally lazy. We're exhausted from living in such a stressful economy. You know, it's just
or we're taught that laziness is good.
I think you'll see people going out with this newfound intrinsic motivation to go and discover new things, to explore science, to explore all kinds of new technology, and that will be the result of them having their basics taken care of. They're not continuously running on this wheel to provide for themselves, to keep their head above water.
So maybe what we do is where you are focusing a little bit on what you feel negative about his things.
Yeah.
Let's grab the positive thing. Yeah. Like let's pick the positive aspects where we can connect and say, let's build from these points of agreement.
I should probably
rather than focusing on here's where we disagree, let's grab on the thing that's good, which is say we all want to be free, like as a most basic starting point. And grab it and build from the positive.
I think you were a bit concerned maybe about a central computer doing a lot of the processing or something like that. Is that your concern?
Actually, every time you speak, I've got more questions because like you said something about science before. And you use science in a very broad, generalized way. And I just have to ask you, what do you mean? Because, I mean, there are so many human activities going on that purport to be science, right? There is a whole science of killing people, which is actually probably one of the most economically productive sciences in our world at the moment, which is dominated by the military-industrial complex. And every day they are thinking up new and more clever ways to kill and destroy and hurt people.
Yeah.
Now, that is one type of science I don't think, even though it's science, it's scientific, because let me explain, because science is not value-based. Science is not about values. Science is just about observation, experiment, and theory. Observation, experiment, hypothesis, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, we're about to run out of time. I'm so sorry.
Not a rebuttal.
I've dominated this discussion. I apologize. Quick roundup.
We need to get back to the core. We need to create new economies. We need to think about philosophy, because philosophy is long gone in our society, and we need to think about philosophy a lot more, and peaceful parenting and all these sort of things.
Building a creative economy. www.buildingacreativeeconomy.com. Check it out. Our conference, Balmain Town Hall, October 29th and 30th. Three international speakers, lots of people like economists, scientists. Check it out. Come to our conference.
Just quickly from the Zeitgeist Movement.
Thanks, guys. Sorry, we are going to have to wind it up. It's been a great, great experience. Thank you so much for coming tonight.
Cheers. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Well, that's another show from Truth News Radio. We'll be back very soon with more groundbreaking news and analysis. See you then.